Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pope John Paul II.
I have come here to pay homage to Mahatma Gandhi, hero of humanity. Mahatma Gandhi told that if all men and women, whatever the differences between them, cling to the truth with respect for the unique dignity of every human being, a new world order, a new world order, a civilization of love can be achieved. May God guide us and bless us as we strive to walk together, hand in hand, and build together a world of peace.
And I'm going to remind His Holy Father how important His voice is. And I'm going to remind His Holy Father how important His voice is in making it easier for politicians like me to be able to kind of stand and defend our positions that are, I think, you know, very important positions to take.
Mr. President, final question.
Yes, sir.
You said famously, when you looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes, you saw his soul.
Yeah.
When you look into Benedict XVI's eyes, what do you see?
God.
When you look into Benedict XVI's eyes, what do you see?
God.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, on September 11th, 1991,
certain that we stand at a defining hour. Halfway around the world, we are engaged in a great struggle in the skies and on the seas and sands. We know why we're there. We are Americans, part of something larger than ourselves. For two centuries, we've done the hard work of freedom, and tonight, we lead the world in facing down a threat to decency and humanity. What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Washington, D.C., at the Kennedy Center on C-SPAN, President Bill Clinton.
And after 1989, President Bush said, and it was a phrase that I often use much, that we needed a new world order, and instead it looks like we got a lot of disorder.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the Vice President of the United States, Jesuit Joe Biden.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again.
I believe we, and particularly you, your class, has an incredible window of opportunity to lead in shaping a new world order for the 21st century. In a way consistent with American interest and the common interest.
And what he means by the New World Order, they're just ushering in the Old World Order. Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on November 2nd, 2014. My name is Walt Stickle and I'll be your host for the next 45 minutes. My co-host, Tom Fresh, will be reading the foreword by Christian Pinto that Christian Pinto wrote for Washington in the Lap of Rome in 1888. By Justin Fulton. He republished the book and wrote a foreword to it, and it's a riveting read. And this, in tonight's broadcast is Sam Adams and the Rights of the Colonist. Now, here's Tom.
Now, the author, Christian Pinto, is going to talk about Sam Adams and the Rights of the Colonists. He says, so tenacious and subversive was the Catholic Church in old Europe that men like John Locke and Samuel Adams excluded those of that religion, Roman Catholicism, from the ordinary rights of citizens. Adams, quoting Locke, best explained why Roman Catholics were barred from involvement in American colonial politics in his renowned work, The Rights of the Colonists, in 1772. Here's what he said, quote, and it is now generally agreed among Christians that this spirit of toleration is the chief characteristical mark of the Church, insomuch that Mr. Locke has asserted and proved that such toleration ought to be extended to all those whose doctrines are not subversive to society. The only sects which he thinks ought to be, and which by all wise laws are excluded from such toleration, are those who teach doctrines subversive of the civil government under which they live, unquote. Quoting further, he says, the Roman Catholics or Papists are excluded by reason of such doctrines as these, that princes excommunicated may be deposed. In other words, the Pope can overthrow kings and princes. According to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope has the authority to excommunicate the President of the United States and depose him, okay? And those that they call heretics may be destroyed without mercy, which we see demonstrated in history of the Inquisitions and Holocaust. These are uniquely Roman Catholic tenets. Continuing, he says, besides their recognizing the Pope in so absolute a manner, in other words, the infallible replacement of Jesus Christ on the earth, continuing, he says, in subversion of government by introducing imperium in imperio, leading directly to the worst anarchy and confusion, civil discord, war, and bloodshed. Let me read the quote again. The Roman Catholics or Papists are excluded. We're talking about the liberties of the colonists, of the rights of the colonists. Roman Catholics and Papists are excluded from these rights by reason of such doctrines as these, that princes excommunicated may be deposed, and those that they call heretics may be destroyed without mercy, besides their recognizing the Pope in so absolute a manner, in subversion of government, by introducing imperium in imperio, leading directly to the worst anarchy and confusion, civil discord, war, and bloodshed, unquote. The Latin phrase imperium in imperio means an order within an order. Now let me explain this. I always liken this imperium in imperio as an onion. Have you ever cut an onion in two and noticed that it is made of layer upon layer upon layer upon layer? Well, that's what imperium in imperio simply tries to designate. That the organization of the Roman Catholic Church, the orders of the Roman Catholic Church, are assembled like an onion, layer upon layer upon layer, so that when one begins to dissect the onion, one is hard pressed to even find the center for all the different layers. All right, this is how Rome protects herself. And the layers of the onion represent the secret societies or orders that are set about under their own names that serve the papacy. Let me give you one example. Freemasonry. It's known now to be controlled by the Jesuit order. It is believed predominantly to be a Protestant organization. But what do they teach? Do they teach Jesus Christ and Him crucified? No. The prerequisite to becoming a Freemason is that you must believe in a supreme deity. That's all. You must be free. In other words, you cannot be a slave. But you must believe in a supreme deity. They don't care what you call your supreme deity. They do not care what you believe religiously, only that you believe in a supreme deity. And that could be the Pope as well. That could be Satan. And I always say with tongue in cheek, that could be a soda cracker, as long as you believe in a supreme being. Now, is that a Protestant organization? Definitely not. What it is, however, is an ecumenical organization where all religious roads lead to heaven. You can worship any god you want in Freemasonry. And of course, as you graduate into the higher and higher degrees, slowly but surely you are taught that Satan, Lucifer, is the god of Freemasonry. Now that destroys Protestantism. That destroys Protestants. That destroys the faith of Protestants who go into Freemasonry. Now look, if you're the Church of Rome and you believe that you are the only church in which salvation is even obtainable, if you believe that Protestantism is a heretical sect and you're in competition to govern the world, as the Pope is, you don't care what the Protestants believe as long as they don't believe the Bible. So they can teach any diabolical tenet and doctrine in Freemasonry so long as it is not the Bible. And though the Bible is a regular fixture, an article of furniture within the Freemasonic Lodge, it is anti-biblical. And so Rome has destroyed the Freemasons who call themselves Protestants but who serve the Pope by promoting these Antichrist doctrines within Freemasonry. That's just one example. The Jesuits control thousands of secret societies in this country, all by various names and rituals. And this is the imperium in imperio, the layer upon layer, the order within an order that defines Roman Catholicism. Now the Latin phrase, continuing, it says the Latin phrase imperium in imperio means an order within an order. If Sam Adams were alive today, he might be branded as a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist for suggesting that the papists set up secret orders in society whose purpose is to subvert the regular powers of government. Yet throughout Rome's dark history, both past and present, this has proven to be the case. In his book, The Secret History of the Oxford Movement, published in 1898, author Walter Walsh wrote this, quote, "At present, the Church of England is literally honeycombed with secret societies, all working in the interests of the scheme of the corporate reunion of the Church of England with the Church of Rome." Unquote. Now, let me say that this is true of every secret society, that they are used for the interests, ultimately, of the Church of Rome. And in this case, the corporate reunion of the Church of England with the Church of Rome. And I maintain that if you look carefully at those who promoted Vatican Council II, you will find these secret societies, predominantly Freemasonry. And that's why so many of the so-called new evangelical televangelists are Freemasons. Just any time the name of one of these popular televangelists comes to mind, just Google the name and include the word Freemason. And many, many, many times you will find that they are 33rd degree Freemasons. The ecumenical movement was literally sold in the evangelical churches by Freemasons, pew sitters in Protestant churches. It was a diabolical infiltration of the Jesuit order through one of these many layers that surround them, that protect them, that isolate them from knowledge, the acknowledgement that they control these secret societies. Freemasonry was the pack mule that brought Vatican Council II and ecumenism into the Protestant churches. And my advice to my listeners is, if you go into an evangelical church and it's teaching reunion with Rome, ecumenical unity and peace with the Roman Catholic Church, one of the first things you ought to do is kick all the Freemasons out of your church, and particularly if your pastor or any of your deacons or board of directors is a Freemason. Get them out of your church. And then pick up the authorized King James Bible and strengthen yourself spiritually for the fight that is about to be unleashed in this country. The battleground is the churches, and it's time to arm ourselves with the truth. Now, we've come up on the break. We'll continue with our reading of the book Washington in the Lap of Rome, and the foreword, back to the book, the foreword to the book Washington in the Lap of Rome, the foreword by Christian J. Pinto. He says, in his book, The Secret History of the Oxford Movement, published in 1898, author Walter Walsh wrote, quote, at present, the Church of England is literally honeycombed with secret societies, all working in the interest of the scheme for the corporate reunion of the Church of England with the Church of Rome. Now, in addition to what I said before the break, I want you to recognize that Vatican Council II was simply a continuation, if not an escalation, of the Oxford movement to reunite the Church of England or the Protestant churches back to the Church of Rome. The movement simply moved from England to the United States of America. And as we continue, the goal of this ecumenical movement will be more apparent to my listeners. Pinto continues, he says, the fact that Rome sought to control the Church of England, and with it the government of England, is very significant. In the year 1888, a Protestant Missions of the World meeting at the Centenary Conference in London warned of the activities of Rome and her Jesuit priests through the Vatican's missionary programs. They warned that both Great Britain and the United States were targeted as the necessary vehicles for the cause of papal world domination. Let me read this again. They warned at this conference that both Great Britain and the United States were targeted as the necessary vehicles for the cause of papal world domination. The Vatican considered that Protestant England and Protestant United States would be their best hope for achieving world domination, and they set their sights on these Protestant nations, these powerful Protestant nations, to use them for papal purposes. And that's what we've discovered in history, that the wars that the United States and Great Britain have fought were simply wars fought for the papacy, unbeknownst to the people. I call them papal proxy wars. Now, another quote says, hence, the missionary program of the Vatican, doubt it who may, embraces the conversion of Britain and the United States of America, and through them, the subjugation of the whole world, unquote. So the missionary program of the Vatican, the Jesuits, is to convert Great Britain and the United States to Roman Catholicism, and through them to subjugate the whole world. And now you know why the United States and Great Britain, to a lesser extent, are the policemen of the world. Military forces, American military forces in almost every country of the world. Are you sick and tired of military intervention by the United States in the affairs of other nations in the world? You ever wonder why the United States seems to be, though it says it's an independent sovereign nation, why it seems to be building an empire? For whom is the United States building an empire? The Pope of Rome. He says nearly every Protestant writer in the Middle Ages would testify that the purpose of Rome's missionary work has very little to do with the gospel and everything to do with expanding the power of the Pope at any cost. You think those days are over? No. He talks about the 19th century America now. He says, in the same year that the Protestant missions issued their warning, a Protestant pastor issued a warning to America. In this book, Justin D. Fulton shows how after the American Revolution, once the doctrine of universal toleration or religious liberty had been written into the Constitution, the Jesuits, along with Roman Catholics of various kinds, began to flood the city of Washington, D.C., knowing that it was destined, that Washington, D.C. was destined to become the new capital of the United States. He said this, quote, "Religious toleration has given welcome to a Jesuit priesthood that is making a religion without God and a state without liberty." They denounce the public schools, curse the Bible, murder history, maim and mutilate literature, unquote. Yes, they even corrupted the Bible, too. And that's why we have so many, what I call, Jesuit Bibles. If you want an unpolluted Word of God, get the authorized King James Version of the Bible. The rest of the Bibles that are available today are simply polluted in order to serve Vatican purposes. Many of them even come from Vatican translations. They are unreliable. They should be burnt. The authorized King James Version is the Word of God for English-speaking people today. Now, the author argues that Catholic nuns began to take control of the hospitals in the city, that is Washington, D.C., giving preferential treatment to fellow Catholics and coercing others to convert to Catholicism or be punished. Meanwhile, the Jesuits quickly built an educational headquarters for themselves at Georgetown University, all for the purpose of being at the very heart of America's political power. Justin Fulton is one of the several authors from this era who were warning that the Vatican's great ambition was to take control of the new government. Another was a 19th century former Roman Catholic priest and personal friend of Abraham Lincoln, Charles Chenecky, who warned, quote, "The American people must be very blind indeed if they do not see that the day is very near when the Jesuits will rule their country, from the magnificent White House at Washington to the humblest civil and military department of this vast republic," unquote. To accomplish their scheme, it was necessary for the agents of Romanism to fight tenaciously against the Bible, burning and forbidding it to everyone except their blind and bloodthirsty priesthood. That's the history of Romanism. If you've been a regular listener to Inquisition Update, they burnt Bibles. They demanded that the Bible be in Latin and Latin only, the language of the priests, and that the priests and the priests alone had possession of the Bible. In other words, you couldn't get the Word of God unless it came from the mouth of a priest, a Roman Catholic priest. He says further, "And even then, the priest dare not read into the text anything but what was commanded by the Holy See." For 1,000 years prior to the American Revolution, Bible-believing Christians understood that Romanism was opposed to the true gospel and sought to extinguish its divine light everywhere upon the earth. Countless souls were tortured, beaten, buried alive and burned at the stake for proclaiming the word of God in obedience to their Lord's command, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Mark chapter 16, verse 15. While claiming to represent the Christian faith, the popes have worked relentlessly to destroy it, condemning with eternal anathemas all those who would dare put their trust in the Bible as the only source of divine revelation. This understanding of church history was well known among Protestant evangelicals prior to the 20th century. But with two world wars and a series of cultural revolutions, the modern American church has become largely blind and ignorant to the historic truth. The fault is partly because our education system has been subverted since about the 1920s, and partly because we as Christians often lack diligence in matters of faith, and if we're not careful, find ourselves preoccupied with worldly interests. In our day, it is said that many believers exalt the flag above the cross and engage in what can only be called patriotic idolatry. For many professing Christians, George Washington has replaced Jesus Christ, and the writings of Thomas Jefferson are favored above the epistles of Paul. Are the problems of our country truly because of left-wing liberals and the ACLU, or because of lukewarm Christians who have forsaken the right way? The great harlot's progress in America, the Roman Catholic Church's progress in America, has been steady from one generation to the next, but seemed to gain by leaps and bounds after World War II. The powers of our country somehow went from fighting a good fight against Adolf Hitler to becoming entangled in a mire of political confusion and spiritual darkness. And where does that darkness come from? Roman Catholicism. The churches have been infiltrated by Jesuit agents. The seminaries have been perverted, teaching Jesuit lies like futurism and dispensationalism. And now we simply dance to Rome's tune. It's time for us to return to the original Protestant belief. Know who the enemy is, know who Antichrist is, and tell it to everybody you know. And show them, educate yourself to be able to show people how they've destroyed our country and how they've destroyed our churches, how they've destroyed the gospel, how they've weakened this nation and used it to conquer the rest of the world for the papacy. Now, the author's going to give us a very important subject, the Central Intelligence Agency. What role has the CIA played in this destruction of America? Quote, "It is hardly a secret that one of the most important American advances in defending the Roman Catholic Church by Catholic elitists was the creation of the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA serves as an agency through which secret assistance to the Holy Mother Church can be provided by secret American society members acting as her defenders." Unquote. There can be no question that the intelligence community in the United States and throughout the world is the ultimate breeding ground for secrecy and hidden agendas. It is often assumed that our own CIA is responsible for black ops and covert operations that are kept secret even from the White House. This was alleged to be true during the presidency of John F. Kennedy with the Bay of Pigs fiasco, and again during the time of Ronald Reagan with the Iran-Contra affair. A brief history of American intelligence reveals the influence of Rome at the very ground level. William Joseph Donovan is the man credited with founding the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, the predecessor of the Central Intelligence Agency. Donovan is called the father of American intelligence, and sometimes the father of Central Intelligence. He was also a devout Roman Catholic. We read, quote, Donovan did more to safeguard and champion the Roman Catholic Church than any other American, and he was rewarded for his services with the highest Catholic award ever received by an American, unquote. My note here is that it could be said legitimately that the CIA was literally created by the Vatican, and she has used it to maintain and serve her purposes, not only in this country, but the whole world. Nicknamed Wild Bill Donovan, he had been the commander of the 69th Infantry Regiment, formerly known as the Fighting 69th, a World War I military unit made up of mostly Irish Roman Catholics, renowned for their bravery in battle and immortalized in a Hollywood movie starring James Cagney. Wild Bill Donovan, also known as a Knight of Malta, was a prominent and influential lawyer, but his Roman Catholic faith is said to have hindered his career in American politics. As such, his greater influence was behind the scenes, in the shadows of the intelligence community. It is more than likely that he received no small amount of help from his friends in Rome in establishing his network of secrecy. The Vatican's intelligence agency is said to be the largest and most capable in the world. In his best-selling book, A Woman Rides the Beast, author David Hunt noted, quote, the Vatican's constituency of 980 million followers is at least three times the number of citizens in any Western democracy. The Pope has thousands of secret agents worldwide. They include Jesuits, the Knights of Columbus, Knights of Malta, Opus Dei, and others. The Vatican's intelligence service and its field resources are second to none, unquote. So the champion, the unchallenged champion of intelligence gathering is the Vatican. They have the largest, most extensive, most detailed intelligence gathering organization on the planet. And its most basic constituent is the confessional box of the Roman Catholic Church, where they get street level intelligence in whatever neighborhood they reside, and they reside in every neighborhood in this country. Continuing, he says, after World War II, it would be Donovan's OSS that would work in cooperation with the Vatican, developing what are today called Vatican rat lines. The rat lines were established to smuggle tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals out of Europe to protect them from facing prosecution. This historic fact was exposed by a former OSS agent, Peter Tompkins, and reported by Samuel Donaldson in the 1999 Primetime Live documentary entitled The Last Refuge. Sam Donaldson actually tracked former Nazis who had escaped with the help of Rome, the Vatican, one of whom had an office inside the Vatican itself. During his interview, Tompkins said, quote, they saved tens of thousands of Nazis in order to use them against the Soviets. They created a clandestine army of ex-Nazis using people like Klaus Barbie, for instance, unquote. Donaldson also interviewed John Loftus, a former Nazi hunter for the United States Department of Justice. He said, quote, the Vatican then had an entire system of monasteries and convents. We call it the rat line. My estimate is that we sent some 60,000 fugitive Nazi war criminals to Argentina after World War II, unquote. Of course, when Sam Donaldson went to the Vatican for answers to these things, he was greeted by a Jesuit historian, Father Robert Graham, who was full of denials in spite of the overwhelming evidence against Rome. At one point, Donaldson asked Peter Tompkins whether the Pope at any time knew about the smuggling operation. He said, did Pope Pius XII know what was going on? Tompkins replied, oh, of course, unquote. Why would the Vatican work to help Nazi criminals escape justice? because the truth is that Hitler's whole Nazi movement had been supported by Rome and the Jesuit order, something documented by countless researchers since the end of World War II. Perhaps the most damning quote concerning this comes from French journalist Edmond Paris in his book, The Secret History of the Jesuits. In it, he documents how the Vatican published the following message on the day of Hitler's death in a communique via Madrid that was published by the Spanish Catholic dictator Francisco Franco on May 3, 1945. Quote, Adolf Hitler, son of the Catholic Church, died while defending Christianity. It is therefore understandable that words cannot be found to lament over his death, when so many were found to exalt his life. Over his mortal remains stands this victorious moral figure. With the palm of the martyr, God gives Hitler the laurels of victory. Unquote. That's right, the Pope lauded Adolf Hitler. The papacy brought Adolf Hitler to power. The papacy directed Adolf Hitler to do what he did. It was a Holy Roman Inquisition. And who were the victims? Protestants, Jews, and Orthodox. He continues, Cambridge author and journalist John Cornwell, in his book, Hitler's Pope, revealed that it was the Roman Catholic Center Party in Germany that gave Hitler his totalitarian power in exchange for agreeing to the Vatican's concordat that Pope Pius XII had been working on for years to establish. Author John W. Robbins, in his book, Ecclesiastical Megalomania, tells us that, quote, Carl Beckham, historian of the Roman Catholic Center Party, gloated, quote, Never yet has a Catholic country possessed such a developed system of all conceivable Catholic associations, secret societies, as today's Catholic Germany, unquote. German Roman Catholics joined the Nazi Party en masse and enthusiastically supported the Hitler regime. Over half Hitler's troops were Roman Catholic. At the height of his power in 1942, Hitler ruled over the largest Roman Catholic population in the world. Unquote. Furthermore, John W. Robbins writes, quote, The German Catholics supported Hitler's war not only because such support was required by the Nazi rulers, but also because his religious leaders formally called upon him to do so. Unquote. So there you have it. The priests of Rome commanded every individual Roman Catholic to support Adolf Hitler's Nazi party and to fight as a crusader in the campaign to exterminate and annihilate heretics, Protestants, Jews, and Orthodox. Now, while some authors have exposed the involvement of Protestant leaders with Hitler, their influence, which we do not deny, and I will add we cannot condone, cannot begin to be compared with the militant network of the Church of Rome that provided more than 20 million Catholics in support of the Nazi regime. When one considers his Catholic faith, the involvement of the American OSS under William Wild Bill Donovan begins to make sense. Donovan was a loyal son of the Catholic Church, clearly helping Rome's murderous Nazis to escape. If one studies history and Nazi Germany carefully, he will recognize that the Holocaust of World War II was nothing less than the Pope's Inquisition at work in the modern world. The manipulation of the Roman Catholic priesthood over the secular powers was exactly the same system that haunted Europe for centuries. In the year 1215, the Fourth Lateran Council under Pope Innocent III was the first to insist that Jews wear the yellow badge of shame to identify themselves, something repeated by Hitler during the war. And where did he get the idea for the Jewish ghettos? Undoubtedly from the Jewish ghetto in Rome that was established more than 300 years earlier and was only done away with in the year 1870. To those who know history, it becomes clear why Hitler in 1936 famously declared, quote, "I'm only doing what the Roman Catholic Church has done for 1,500 years, only more effectively," unquote. It's interesting to note that after the war, Wild Bill William Donovan was given one of the Vatican's highest honors for his service to the Roman Catholic Church. Quote, "General William Wild Bill Donovan was decorated in July of 1944 by Pope Pius XII with the Grand Cross of the Order of St. Sylvester, the oldest and most prestigious of papal knighthoods. This award has been given to only 100 other men in history who, by feat of arms or writing or outstanding deeds, have spread the faith and have safeguarded and championed the Roman Catholic Church."
Well, we've run out of time. Thanks, Tom. Well, that is the end of part 4, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid Shaping Events in 2014. Tomorrow's broadcast is going to be the Vietnam War. Little preview, the first sentence is, "To the Vatican, Vietnam was another exercise for the planning of Catholic authoritarianism in an alien land against the wishes of the majority of the population. The Vatican is a master at using political and military opportunities to further its own religious policies, which ultimately means the expansion of the Catholic Church." That's a quote from Every Manhattan, Vietnam, Why Did We Go? It seems to be a very big deception.
Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives. The best is clear to see that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be that we've lived our lives in lies. Seems to be we are born and then we die. Seems to be life passes, it just flies, and it's clear to see that only God's truth will survive. Seems to be this world can bring fame, riches, medals of honor and glory, just for a time and a season. Fame, riches, medals of honor and glory, with no everlasting purpose or reason. Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives. The best is clear to see that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be